Hello, I'm Amelia Winger-Bearskin, the host of Wampum.Codes. We are brought to you with generous support from the Mozilla Foundation and the Co-Creation Studio at MIT. I interview Native and Indigenous artists, activists, technologists, entrepreneurs, inventors, and all-around cool people. And I'll let our first guest of our very first podcast introduce herself.
Great, yeah. Well, my name is Asha Veeraswamy. I am an Indigenous storyteller, creative director, and digital media producer that really focuses on AR, VR, and XR technologies and how we transition to those in the 21st century program. But we were separated by space and by time. And the way we met each other was after I had graduated, I was added to the alumni student list from NYUITP. And I kept seeing these emails by somebody with the last name Bearskin. And I was like, Bearskin, this sounds like a very Native last name. And, I decided to click on your website and bio, and I saw one of your pieces there, which was a video grip piece called Say Indian. And I knew I had to reach out immediately because prior to that, I thought that I had been the only Native American student, if one of a very small handful of Native American students in the program. And so we connected. So I sent, Amelia an email saying, Miawiskeno.
Yeah, that's so
hello. in Seneca language. And that's how we went. Amelia, yeah. How did you feel when you got my email?
Oh man, I was so surprised because, like you, I thought, okay, maybe I'm not the first, Native American student at ITP, but for sure I'm like gonna be the only like Seneca or Seneca Cayuga or Haudenosaunee, Native person in all of ITP. And then not only were we both Native, but we're from the same tribe and we have the same language. And I was so shocked to see like an ITP list, response that said Niau Eskimo, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And I think it was so inspiring because that same week I had connected with a couple of other women from, from our tribe who were also in VR and also in experimental filmmaking and new media. And I was like, that was kind of the thing that pushed me to the point of saying, I think we need a podcast of all these incredible women, because people will say to me all the time, oh, you're making a podcast about, Indigenous people in using emerging media and new technologies. Is that really hard to find them? And I'm like, no, not only is it not hard to find them, but they're all right now just women from my tribe. So that's how many of us there are, is that you can actually make a niche of like, oh no, it's just going to be just about our tribe. So I'm definitely starting this podcast out by just first starting with women from, that are Haudenosaunee, who are working in emerging technologies and who are storytellers using new technologies. And then I would like to invite other Indigenous artists from different tribes around the world to chime in. But I'm like, we have so many of us just in my tribe. Like, I wanted to start with that. Also to kind of show people that this isn't so niche that there's only 10. Like, if I have six women that I'm showing, that's because there are so many, right? Which is really cool, which is really awesome. And not just working in emerging media, but really pushing the envelope and doing some of the most, like, interesting and recognized work of the moment right now. So I love being able to tell people that when I talk about my podcast, they're like, what? That's amazing that there's more than one. And I'm like, not just one, there's many, and the work's incredible. So thank you so much for being part of this project.
Thank you for having me. And I'm so glad that we're able to connect.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm so glad you get to be the first podcaster.
Yay for being the first.
I know. Totally. Totally. And I'm glad that it's like we're the two IT peers on the group too, which is really funny. And ITP is like such a, it's like an alumni group, a cult, an incubator. It's an awesome kind of thing to be a part of. Leading into that, I think when we first chatted for the first time, you were in at the R Lab, which is an incubator at NYU's program, and now you're in a new incubator. So would you mind talking to me a little bit about that journey from one incubator to the next?
Right. So one thing that I've really been interested in doing within the space of AR, VR, and XR is seeing how do you create something that fills a need, right? It's, you know, because on one side you can tell stories, which there definitely is a need for. And then on another side, it's, you look at the populations that you work with, which, so before I went to ITP, I was a high school STEAM teacher, and I did that for 7 years. And I worked with high achieving, underprivileged students. And that was definitely something that I still carried forward with me, even after ITP, was, you know, how do I kind of serve this population using this new and emerging tech? And so the project that I've been working on for the past few months is called Playmantic. And Playmantic is a collaborative extended reality platform for immersive learning. So within this, students and teachers can creatively analyze classic texts such as theater text to then attach, you know, memes and GIFs to in this process of like engaging with active experiencing principles. So this is what the idea that I've been working on for the last few months. So it started as a very small idea at Hack Hunterdon, and it won the hackathon. So it started as a 2-day project. From there, we applied to Bose for their AR app pitch competition, and the idea won grand prize. From there, we decided to go into R-Lab. So what R-Lab is it is funded by the New York City Economic Development Commission, and it's the first of its kind to be funded publicly, where it, the goal of it is to take new and emerging media such as VR, AR, machine learning, AI, blockchain, etc., and see where is the intersection of that within other industries that exist in New York, such as, you know, finance, theater, education, etc., entertainment. So I was very happy to be there at the R-Lab in their R-Lab Startup Bootcamp. And from there, you know, we kind of learned about lean business development, because one of the important things, at least for me at this point, is to learn how do you make something sustainable, right? Something that can grow on itself. So from there, we applied to the Broadway Tech Accelerator, which is run by the Schubert Organization, who is the largest Broadway theater owner on Broadway. And Playmantic was accepted. So we just completed the first 2 weeks of curriculum. And now we're going to decide what the next steps are.
Wow, that is so exciting. And what a really unique group of incubators too. It makes sense that we're in this time where this medium is really forming, and we're finding out new pathways for, not for just monetization, but sustainability and reaching new audiences. And I think it's really interesting how you went from like a university-backed incubator that is also connected to you know, the economics of New York City, and then to Broadway and this Broadway incubator. That's so fascinating. I think that's such a very uniquely New York story as well, which is really awesome. And as a native New Yorker, I think that's really cool. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really exciting. So have you gotten to a point with Playmantics where you are at a user's testing phase? And if so, I would love to hear what some things that you've heard feedback-wise, whether it's like interesting ideas of what people thought to try to use it to make that maybe surprised you or were interesting to you?
Yeah. So Playmantic right now is currently exists as a single feature product. And what it does is it allows students who are learning classic theater text, in this particular case, Shakespeare, to learn and memorize the text passages. And the way it does this is it uses augmented reality glasses and 360 degree audio to rehearse with your virtual rehearsal partner in space. So that's what it encompasses right now. And throughout the course of this new accelerator, the goal is to develop a fully working product. So I would say we're not quite user testing yet. We have demoed it the first section a few times, and we've got some really great feedback about user interaction, user experience, because augmented reality glasses are very new as a medium, right? And it was one thing that I really enjoyed was when I was in the R lab in the fall, every major company announced they are coming out with augmented reality glasses. So Facebook and Amazon announced on the same day that their AR glasses will be released. Apple has been, you know, notoriously filing patents. who else? Snapchat announced that they are coming out with Snapchat Spectacles V2. Another company called North is also releasing their V2 in 2020. So it's very exciting to be working on the edge of this medium, right? But it's also a challenge because a lot of the user interaction has not been standardized yet the way it has with other mobile devices or even with VR.
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's a really fascinating time, and your work could honestly be something that forms that user experience or informs the way in which people think about using AR. That's really exciting. What was it that drew you to AR, either for this project or just in general?
Yes. So when I applied to ITP, I knew for sure that I was interested in virtual reality and game engines and learning how to kind of create within using that. And when I was there at ITP, I decided, let me try some things, right? I, at that point, was trying a lot of virtual reality experiences, and a lot of it was very isolating on some level, right? A lot of it was meant to be these kind of single person experiences. And for me, in my particular practice, when it comes to VR, XR, and AR, what I enjoy creating, what I specialized in creating when I was in ITP was creating multi-user collective and social experiences. So the very first final project that I did was a project that connected the virtual reality user in headset with other audience members who were out of headset in the same environment. And it was this kind of soundscape where, you know, a little playground where you could toss snowballs, and it was a very fun project. And it's interesting to kind of circle back to it now. There's a professor at NYU called, his name is Tom Igo. And one thing that he likes to say jokingly is the first project you make at ITP will also end up being your last project at ITP, right? or otherwise. Yeah. And I look back to that. And, you know, my first semester, I took this class called Sound for VR and Physical Computing. And so for my final, I meshed all of these together where you had this snow playground where you could walk around and kind of have this sound experience while interacting with multiple users. And looking structurally at Playmantic, it's kind of the same thing in that way, right? You have this spatialized sound aspect. You're interacting with, because you're with AR glasses, you're able to interact with other people, whether that's your virtual rehearsal partner or a real rehearsal partner, right? And so it's interesting to see how these themes and threads carry forward.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think of whenever I meet an ITPer for the first time, one of the first questions they'll ask me is, what was your thesis? And it's so funny how you can learn so much about somebody's journey, what they did at ITP or what they're doing now, by even if it's like 10 years in the past of what their thesis is. It's like, oh yeah, okay, you're one of those kind of kids. Cool.
What was your thesis at ITP, Amelia?
Oh, my thesis was called Imagination.Codes, and it was teaching kids about poetry and the humanities and the arts using code. So it was kind of maybe the opposite of what a lot of ed tech products were coming out, were like, teach every kid to code. And I was like, okay, if kids are coding, can we also teach them about poetry? Can we also teach them about art? Can we also teach them about music? So it was kind of a way of infusing more of that STEAM message into that land grab of every kid needs to learn to code. And I was like, great, can we also teach them to have imagination and creativity and about mm-hmm. some really cool humanities inspo? So that was my project. Yeah.
No, my thesis at ITP was definitely a lot more artsy, because I remember thinking in my last semester, Asha, you know, I was like, I want to make a multiplayer augmented reality experience, right? And I was very blessed at the time that I had applied for an internship with A&E Networks. And so we had the opportunity to create a multiplayer augmented reality video game for the TV show Storage Wars. And so since I was already doing this externally for A&E Networks, internally at ITP, I was like, do you need to make two multiplayer AR games in a period of three months?
That's a lot.
And the answer was like, no, I don't think so. So what I did for thesis was I created a series of motion capture data sculptures based on the dance form known as Brazilian Zouk. And so what I did was they were physical sculptures taken from motion capture data of these dancers. And the goal of this project was to ask, what does trust look like, right? What does it look like between people specifically? And then from there, you know, there was a showing that happened in Brooklyn. So it was shown in an art gallery in Brooklyn. And then we also had a virtual showing that happened on the VR platform, High Fidelity. So High Fidelity, if you're not aware of it, it is a social VR platform that's built off of the blockchain. So we had this whole art gallery showing experience where we extended the sizes and people were able to really interact with them in a different way. So yeah. So that was what I did.
Yeah. That's awesome. That is really, really fun. You know, and I get asked this question a lot. I'm going to, of course, ask you because I'm just trying to find the best answer because it's something that I ask myself all the time is, you know, what can VR and AR do either artistically or even just emotionally or through storytelling that you found is different than other mediums?
Right. Well, I would say virtual reality, it is singular in the sense of immersion that it can provide to the participant or to the user, to the person experiencing it, right? Because you put on a headset and you're in another world. And the question is, what is that world, right? What is that experience and what is that story, right? And that story can take different forms. You know, it can take the form of a 360-degree video, or it can take the form of, you know, something created with the game engine. So I would say that's definitely one of the interesting aspects of how VR can be used.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely remember the first time I was in VR playing that awesome game, Super Hot. I love that game. And I was in it. It was the first time I ever like fell on my face in VR because I was like reached out to the virtual table in front of me and like leaned my body up on it. But of course it didn't exist, even though I had been developing in VR, even though I, you know, every part of my brain knew that it's a virtual table, I can't lean on it. And still I got like so immersed and so wrapped up, I like, you know, fell on my, on my face. And I'm like, yeah, it tricks us in this way that can be very fun and playful, but it also can be really resonant and beautiful. I wanted to ask you about other artistic influences or even not even artistic influences, just things from your childhood that you were fascinated by or throughout your formation as an artist and an entrepreneur, that maybe we can get some threads of where this way of expressing yourself came from.
That's a great question. So a little bit about my background, right? Or perhaps my family's background. So my mother and I, we are enrolled Senecas from the Seneca Nation of Indians, which is upstate New York. And my father is also Indian, but he is Indian from India, right? And so both of them were the first people in their families to go to college, right? And from there, you know, my father studied economics and my mother studied accounting. And they, after they met, you know, they had two options. And either they could, you know, kind of go into academia and go into, you know, working in companies, or they could build something for themselves. And so they did, right? They had a series of small businesses that they kind of, you know, owned and managed. And so from a very young age, I was always incorporated into that experience, right? Whether it was as simple as like answering telephone calls or like, you know, going to the bank, making deposits. And so I think some part of that definitely carried over. The first business that I actually made, I think I was maybe 10 or 11 years old.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And it was called Asha Travels and Tours, right? And it was a little travel agency where at the time, you know, Expedia and the internet, it existed, but there was still a lot of lack of trust that was happening. And so what I would do was people would come into the office, right, or ask to buy these travel sale tickets, and then I would buy them on Expedia and then resell them to the person that wasn't paying in cash or check, right?
That's amazing.
So that was kind of the first business that I had when I was growing up. And to see kind of how that's carried forward now is, you know, having had this experience with traditional businesses, you know, my parents were in real estate before, is really seeing, okay, this is the question that I've been asking, right? How does business work within new markets? Right. And just looking back to how this kind of affects Indigenous tribes. So I have a little piece of happy news, happy update.
Yes.
I recently filed my LLC on Seneca territory.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
Yeah. So that is, you know, very, very exciting because it, you know, the regulations and the tax incentives, stuff like that, they're different. Right. So the name of the company that I founded, I just got the paperwork for it approved this week. And it's called Seneca Interactives.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so Seneca Interactives LLC is a digital and physical fabrication firm. And the mission of Seneca Interactives is to innovate Native American communities using emerging tech, right? And the purpose of this is to promote cultural continuity, economic development, and tribal sovereignty. Right? Because if you look at the bread and butter of most tribes, including our tribe, right, you've had the same businesses that are there, which are usually casinos, smoke shops, and gas stations. And, you know, the way a lot of the population or the tribes kind of makes money is, you know, there's some tax regulations around that works differently than it does in the rest of, you know, non-reservation territory. And so the question is, okay, if this is being applied to physical goods and services, you know, we now live in a world where digital goods and services also have value. And so the question is, how do you apply these principles of tribal sovereignty to digital worlds, right? And digital goods and assets. So that's something that I'm very interested in exploring over the next year.
That is so exciting. And I love how that ties back into your travel agency, right? Where in the beginning of when people felt uncomfortable interfacing with this new technology, you were like, hey, I can be the conduit. I can take the risk. I'm purchasing this thing, reselling it to you as a 10-year-old, which is amazing. And then now as an adult, you're like, okay, you know, what do I do to help people feel comfortable with these digital products, assets, in this new market, and then connect it to my community and say, you know, be that medium and that conduit for that exchange, which I think is amazing. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, this is something I've been thinking a lot about recently, especially in 2020, is what does it mean to be a bridge, right? And there's an art piece. So before coming back to New York in early January, I was in an artist residency called Brahmin AI, which is run by a professor at NYU called Gene Kogan, who focuses mostly on machine learning and art. And so I went to the artist residency, which was located in Bombay Beach, California. And the art piece we made there, the working title is called The Portal. And what it is it's a massive multimedia video wall. So you walk through this tunnel of TVs. There's about 60 TVs that are mounted on either side. And at the end, you have a virtual reality experience that you can access. So in Brahman AI and in Gene Kogan's work, he's created this artificial artist called Abraham. And so what happens is you walk through the tunnel of TVs, which display the local scenery of Bombay Beach, and then you put the VR headset on. And when you put it on, you're able to interact with Abraham, the AI artist, and it generates new generated landscapes that then appear on the TVs. And so this is something that in this work that brought up a lot of questions is, what does the transition from old media, I mean, TVs are still considered in the category of new media art, but for the purpose of this conversation, right? What does it mean to transition from old media to new media, right? And what does that connection look like? So that's a question that's definitely been revolving in my head, and it sprouts in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, oh man, I wish I could see Abraham and the tunnel of TVs. That's pretty amazing. I'll love to do that.
I'll have to send you a picture.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. And I'll link it with the podcast. That'll be super fun. What kind of art or music or cultural, storytelling, books, TV shows are you really fascinated by right now? Like what's something that's come out this year that you're just like really excited about and would like everyone to know about if they don't know about it already?
In terms of shows or books?
Anything. I mean, you know, it's like I get inspired a lot by fashion. I really like the way that VR is sort of like experiencing a renaissance on the runway where suddenly we have all of these new facial sort of accessories that are happening. And I like looking at what fashion's imagining VR to look like, even though we're not there yet where it's fashionable, but I like looking at how it would connect with the body. I mean, I'm like, my background's as a performance artist, so I always am interested in when we have hardware that's connected to the body, thinking of it in an aesthetic way or how it would move with the body. And a lot of these AR glasses obviously are getting more and more aesthetic, more lightweight and kind of incorporating the body more. So I get a lot of inspiration from looking at fashion aesthetics to rethink ways in which we could take haptics or ways in which we can use our eyes and our body looking outside of maybe traditional glasses and sunglasses concepts. So that's me. That's like what I get inspired by is like fashion week accessories for VR. I don't know why. But is there anything like that for you where you have been, I don't know, just odd places where you're getting inspiration right now?
Yeah. So one source of inspiration for me has always been science fiction. I loved reading science fiction growing up, and I still do. And seeing how science fiction influences user interaction in products, right? So there's an amazing book that I am in the process of reading right now called Make It So, which is interaction design lessons taken from science fiction. And one of the examples that they have in there is in 1996, Motorola released a phone called the StarTech, right? And it was a clamshell flip phone. Prior to that, they had released a phone called the MicroTech, which was a phone that flipped downwards, right? And for some reason, the MicroTech never really took off. And so the story goes that, you know, they were going around asking people, you know, why don't you like this phone? And the reoccurring reason that came back was people didn't want a phone that flipped downwards. They wanted a cell phone that flipped upwards the way the communicators did in Star Trek.
That's so right? Cool.
And so they redesigned the phone to flip upwards. They had a nice little name rebrand and called it the StarTech. And it became one of the first, I believe the first, clamshell flip phone to reach the mainstream market, and it sold over 60 million units.
Wow, that's so cool. I mean, yeah. Obviously, I love Star Trek, so
Yeah, so do I.
I just want to be Chakotay someday. It's like a native in space, you know?
Right?
Really badass tattoos.
Huge inspiration, because Voyager was, when I was a kid growing up, in Captain Janeway, that was, you know, the TV show that was on of the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing Chakotay, who was, you know, Native American, you know, second in command. And I was like, wow, we got natives in space.
So good.
I was like, I want to be a native in space one day.
Obviously. Definitely have great face tattoos. Definitely be like kind of a rebel, but like has the captain's back, you know? I'm like, uh-huh. Amazing. He was my favorite, obviously. But yeah, I love thinking about, you know, native futurism. And there is a nice movement, I feel like, that's happening across the other natives that are working in VR, XR, emerging technologies, AI. And more and more people are asking me, okay, what is native futurism? And, you know, what is it? What is it that it's natives in space? Or I really love the statement that I've seen in a billboard recently when I'm working with this project for Freedoms Congress, and someone posted this recently. Of course, I'm going to like say the wrong attribution. Maybe later I'll re-record this and say the actual attribution. But there's this beautiful billboard that says, there are Black people in the future. And I liked that as being sort of the basis of thinking about Native people, that it's not necessarily even about Native people in space, but it's just like there are Native people in the future. And that's what futurism is just being able to have a solid belief that that we have like resilience and a strong message that carries forward culture, just as it has in the past thousands of years, right? But what does that mean to you? Do you consider yourself a Native futurist? Do you even like labels like that? I kind of don't. I don't really care about them, but you know, I don't know. What do you think about that?
Natives in space, which of course there have been Native American astronauts, but.
Yeah.
But it's also about the near future, right? And there's a t-shirt on that you'll see on the powwow circuit that says, "We are still here." And whenever I see that t-shirt, it reminds me, you know, Native Americans, a lot of people think are stuck in the past in some way, right? And it's important to, you know, preserve that cultural tradition and cultural continuity. But then the question is, you know, we're still here and we will still be here. And so how do we adapt to the future, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I like to say this statement, which is, you know, don't colonize our future. So like, don't assume that we don't exist in the future or that our ideas don't exist in the future. And I usually say this to people who will talk about big ideas for how they could reimagine governance or participatory governance or the way they could imagine society being organized. And I'm like, you know, don't colonize the future. Like, talk to diverse people and see how what their imagination is for the future based and informed on their different cultural communities, because I think you'll find that something that you think, wow, wouldn't it be amazing if we could change it a little bit? Especially with like the Iroquois Confederacy and our cultural background of you know, being Haudenosaunee, and which had such a complex system of participatory governance and a lasting peace. It's, you know, it's like, think bigger, actually. You know, there are cultures that for thousands of years had ways in which they were able to incorporate their technologies, their storytelling, their communities in sustainable and different ways. Think bigger. Like, don't colonize the future. So I like to think of it in that way too, especially when I'm communicating with people, you know, maybe aren't as familiar with Indigenous cultures and with ways in which we organize ourselves for thousands of years, which I think can be really interesting guideposts towards imagining a different type of future. I guess to simplify that, I would say that futurism needs our voices, right? They need our imagination. What are some ways in which, you know, if you were to dream big and think about the future, what would be something that you would hope would be carried forward into the future, either from what you're doing with storytelling or even from either of your cultural backgrounds?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is this sense of community, you know, and, you know, hopefully carrying some of the culture that we've had forward into the community. Because due to history, we have lost so much, right? In terms of the language, in terms of the arts. You know, for the Seneca people, the first written account that I know of was written, you know, history of the Senecas was written by, you know, a European, right? And so much of that history has kind of been written and through the history of indigenous boarding schools and overwritten, right? And so what I would like to see happen is I would really like to see Native American peoples come back to this participatory sense of community, right? And from there, you know, see, you know, when it comes to the founding of the, and this may be a little controversial, but when it comes to, you know, the founding of America and kind of speaking about participatory governance, you know, the United States, I believe it was the Senate or the House of Representatives, you can Google this later, but they issued a statement in the 1980s stating that they had drawn, the United States had drawn inspiration about the structure of its governmental structure from the Six Nations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. And I think a lot of that information, it's funny because I will tell people about that and I'll kind of talk about the history of it and they'll say, people should know that. And I'm like, no, I mean, this has been kind of like publicly known or quote unquote known for a long time, especially since the 80s when it was more like ratified. Like, yes, actually that is true. Even though we have the documents of George Washington writing about the Iroquois and talking about their Confederacy and how that inspired him, and the other founding fathers like Thomas Jefferson, who spent so much time actually on our reservation learning about, you know, wampum and about the way in which we had our participatory government structured. So it's like not even a hearsay or an interpretation. It's like you have it in the words of the founding fathers themselves. And then it, like, as you mentioned in the 80s, Congress is like, yep, actually that's true. And people will still say, but how do people not know about this? I would say that people in who went to school in New York know about it, because it's kind of awesome how we have this required section in fourth grade in New York State where people learn about the Haudenosaunee, the Iroquois Confederacy, which is really cool. And also similarly in Canada, they do as well in their primary school. But other than that, you know, it's really fun to kind of get that story out there and talk about, in order to imagine a different future, we also have to understand our past in a more diverse way, where it's kind of relearning about our past and to imagine a different type of future. So it's not like, how can we shift radically the United States government to rethink about how it understands participatory governance? It's actually saying, how actually did they think about participatory governance? And actually it was a lot more diverse than the story has been communicated, right? And so it's not actually that radical to reimagine a new future. It's more course correcting. I say that it's kind of like having some malware in your code. And so it's like, well, we just got to debug this a little bit. Like in the source code, there's some interesting diverse concepts that connected to a lasting peace that was created by an indigenous group of people that's native to this country that helped the founding fathers to actually imagine a future without kings, a future of participatory governance that they could say would lead to a lasting peace. So maybe that's just some malware that we got it wrong, that we've been like adding to this code, right?
Yeah, no, one thing that I think is interesting, at least the way I think about it, is, you know, this idea of the United States government was in some sense co-opted from our nation, right? And so, and there wasn't a lot of credit that was given for many years, right? And so I would like to see that as we move forward and as we create content, right? One of my personal dreams, I'll put it out here, you know, because so many Native American tribes have casinos, is there's been a huge rise of location-based entertainment experiences that have proliferated in New York City and also in the United States. And it's definitely having a big moment right now. So I would love to see Native American casinos adopt the location-based entertainment industry, but really promote it from the inside out, where you could have like these Native American, like I had some exhibitions where proposal pitches where you could move in a certain way, and then you could learn a dance form, right? So this idea of like these experiences that can then be shared with the rest of the population, and then also, but also respected in terms of like, what is the fiscal equity that we're sharing with you, right?
Yeah. No, I think that's really fascinating because I mean, it's a very, also very American concept that casinos also can be cultural hubs. Like, I think a lot about Las Vegas, and very frequently they push out very early technology, and they're the kind of the first place that'll figure out maybe a business model or how to even just scale, like having, you know, hundreds of people in VR, having hundreds of people in an immersive projection. Sometimes the very first instances you'll see will be like at CES in Las Vegas, and then that'll move into casinos, and then that'll move into a mass market of tourists way before even film festivals are looking at that or before museums are looking at that. And so I like that concept of saying, you know, the casino is the place where a lot of people are experiencing native culture, but it's in this very limited way. Why not expand that and turn these into cultural hubs, into a, just a new way of experiencing entertainment, which is already, it's already happening, right? Like, we're already seeing, you know, even in Las Vegas, there's a lot more emphasis on experiences rather than just maybe traditional casino formats, right? Mm-hmm. And more people are going to Las Vegas and wanting to experience all of those types of entertainment, not just maybe the type of like Broadway shows and music and gambling. They're really looking towards, I feel like every hotel I stay at now for tech conferences in Vegas has some kind of immersive something. Like, I did this immersive CSI. Oh, really? It was like hilarious. It was so hilarious. They're like, you're finding the criminal with the DNA in this space. And it was like an escape room and, you know, VR. And it was like really hilarious. And it was just at a, I'm trying to remember, I think it was at MGM. And I was, of course, there for CES. But yeah, so I like that idea a lot. And it also does, I think your interest in markets and emerging markets is really helpful in this space, and saying, okay, yeah, how do we look at emerging markets, take it back to our community, look at how people could interact, and also share our culture in a way that is equitable, that is saying, how does this benefit, you know, it's entertaining for guests, but it also can teach them about our culture, but it also then, you know, brings a new type of revenue into the community, which is really, which would make it sustainable. I think that's awesome. I hope that you get to do that really soon.
I hope so too. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's, I mean, hey, I'm there.
Time, you know?
Yeah, no, totally.
You're established LLC.
Yeah, absolutely. No, that's really awesome. I mean, hey, I will be the first person to come and see your like immersive museum at the casino on our reservation. That'd be amazing. Yeah.
That's something
really cool.
That it's, you know, for me, it's very important because a lot of, you know, a lot of tribes have massive amounts of poverty, right? Yeah. And massive amounts of, you know, lots of things, right? Drug abuse, alcohol abuse. And so, you know, there's this idea of kind of like reclaiming the cultural hub, right? Yeah. You know, one example that people will go to is like the Longhouse, but if you aren't part of that religion, then what is your cultural hub, right? Yeah. And so I think that that's a question to kind of carry moving forward, right? And then also it's like, how do you empower Native American tribes to do business?
Absolutely. Right. And I like this kind of reclaiming, because I think that there is a real disparaging view about our casinos from the wider culture, right? They're like, oh, that's like, I don't know. I don't even know how exactly people word it to me, but they're just like, and it's like a, I don't know what. And it would be really cool to reclaim that so that it becomes actually this incredibly cool cultural hub where we're like, yeah, Native casinos you thought were one way. Guess what? You're wrong. They're really incredibly interesting in this other new way, plus the same way. And I don't know. I like that kind of disruption. And I think a way of reclaiming it without, without even being ashamed of it. It's like, yeah, there casinos are a certain way, and why don't we even keep going, go forwards times 10, and make them even more radical, interesting, fun, amazing. Entertainment sometimes has a you know, sometimes there's that lowbrow and highbrow concept in art, and I've never been very interested in it. I'm very interested in that space between entertainment or in between media, where I think you can sometimes get really creative things done. I mean, obviously I'm a huge Star Trek nerd, and that was something that was very mass media, but it had so much of, it had so much creativity and art and artistic practice like melded into that fantasy of that science fiction universe. And I think, I don't know, Deep Space Nine was essentially like a casino and and I'm like, dude, why, let's just make all of our casinos into like Deep Space Nine.
I love it.
Yeah, no, this is awesome. I can't wait. I can't wait for this new future.
Same here.
Yeah, this is gonna be super rad. So I wanted to give you a chance to plug, I mean, I feel like you talked a lot about Playmantics, and I want to give you a chance to maybe plug any other projects you had going on, or even other projects of friends of yours that you're like, you know, people listening, I would love you to go, like, what's a call to action you might have for people, that things they could check out after this podcast, either about your work or maybe some other things which you talked about?
That's a great question, Amelia.
It's okay too, because we could always, like, you know, if you think of anything, I can always splice it in or add it in links, but go for it.
Yeah. Let me think about it a little bit more. And we may have to splice it in later.
Yeah, no problem. And I can always just say, you know, there's going to be links with where this podcast is, and have them be there. So don't worry. You can always feel free to think about it. Send me links later. I can either read them out and splice it in, or I can, you know, just put them on the in the text. Mm-hmm. So one last thing I want you to do with me. I'm going to be speaking at the Four Freedoms Congress this week in Los Angeles. And it's a way of taking the political theater of like the Republican or Democratic National Convention and instead saying, what would a convention be that was led by artists and new technologists and media makers and primarily people of color. And it was just fun. So it's like has the town halls and it has the delegates and it has, you know, all the kind of theater that would exist in a convention. But of course the way artists do it, it's going to have a lot more performances and it has interactive workshops and immersive installations and all that kind of fun stuff. And something that I decided to do for it was to have a sensory room that was for low sensory, because I always love going to these conferences and conventions, but then I need my like quiet introvert time. So I create these like quiet introvert spaces where people can kind of like tune out and go in introspectively for a minute while they're having all of this, you know, there's 450 people attending the event. It's like a lot of people. If you're kind of need like a quiet space, chill out room. And then you have noise canceling headphones that you put on and you can listen to the soundscape that I created. And also these, I call them unguided meditation. And I'm kind of playing and being satirical with the notion of like what people might expect from like a native new agey kind of like a meditation, but instead they're very actually mundane. They're more like, oh, I got up today and I'm walking down the street and I see a friend and we go to a ramen restaurant and we get right in and we get seated right away. And then I see somebody at work who's like really mean to me and they're waiting outside and I just like feel kind of happy about it. They're kind of like silly, like meditations, instead of it being like you're sitting under a crystal waterfall that turns your aura blue. They're just very like what if we just think together about a meditation that's like funny, fun. So I thought, I don't know if you want to play this game with me, but I thought, what would an unguided meditation for you be? Like, what would be something that if you had headphones on and someone was like guiding you through something that would help you feel relaxed or connected or just like make you laugh? What would yours be?
Mm-hmm. What would my
yeah. Yeah.
So there's something that I really love about morning routines, right? So I think it would be like you could go through a morning routine of, okay, welcome, you know, here's the sound of waking up, here's the sound of the sun coming through the window, then it's like, okay, let's remember to water the plants, guys, the last plants died, but we're gonna take care of these ones. Right? So I there's something that I really enjoy in the sound of routines when it comes to soundscapes. Another thing that I do enjoy is I enjoy watching fabrication videos. Yeah, so sometimes even at night, I will put on like, you know, fabrication videos and just hear the sounds of like wood getting cut or stuff like that in a very ASMR kind of way. So, no.
Dude, that's awesome. I love that. That's, no, I feel the same way, especially those videos where they're like making pasta and they're like pushing the pasta through, like those GIFs where it's like the pasta comes over, like slices it, or it'll be like making screws like by like extruding the metal through it. I can watch those forever. No, I love that. I've been trying to think about like, how do I use sound to kind of drop people's pulses and have them have that. Like, I love the concept of guided meditations, and I've like downloaded a million of them, but they always stress me out because they're these kind of like weird, like I go on this journey and then halfway in and I'm like, dude, this is weird and uncomfortable and I feel like, what? And so then I stopped using them, but then I was like, what if I could recreate this format so that it's something that is, yeah, it's just soothing and calming, but without maybe being too weird.
Are you gonna use vocals, or are you gonna use like ambient kind of sounds?
Both, I think. I think it'll be like ambient sounds. You know, I like went to the beach yesterday and took some recordings of the ocean, and then I have other sounds that I'm making, you know, on the piano. But then I also am talking, and a lot of the things I'm talking with people on this journey are very like kind of mundane, actually. And I like that, like that they're just like, you walk down the street and you see a friend and you wave to them and you smile because it's really great to see them. Then you get on the bus and you go to work. So it's like very like mundane, or they're mundane in the sense that they're kind of encouraging, like you went to a meeting with your community, you're trying to organize and do, you know, great work, but it was difficult, but you still did it. You know, like those kind of things that are just like affirmations, but they're more connected to, I don't know, they're not super new agey, I guess. And I liked that. I'm like, oh yeah, it's like a native person doing guided meditation, but it's actually quite mundane. <You know? laughs>
So, like non-new age.
Not really at all. It's more just like, I don't know, maybe just millennial musings. And then that's okay. Getting your pulse to drop. I have a fear of flying. And so I thought I would download all these guided meditations that would help me, like when I'm on an airplane, I could like, cause I love my noise canceling headphones. I'm like, oh, I can listen to these soothing voices, but they always get a little, they always get a little wild, you know? And the voices are like a little bit too, it's like almost like they're too spacey, you know, and they're too kind of pseudo religious for me. And I'm like, I don't know. I just maybe want a friend that's just like, hey, Amelia, like, you know, take a deep breath and, you know, just think about your cat and her fuzzy ears, you know, like something really like.
That's definitely a huge thing is, you know, people want friends, right? Yeah. There's a piece that it's in progress. It's not done yet, but it's called Eat Pancakes with a Virtual Being.
So yes, I remember you told me about this. It's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, so received a grant from the Virtual Being Summit, which is organized by Edward Saatchi, co-founder of Oculus Story Studio. And the project itself is about loneliness, right? Almost half of all Americans consider themselves to be chronically lonely, right? And even going back to ASMR, a huge category or burgeoning category within ASMR world is the ASMR boyfriend or ASMR girlfriend.
Oh, wow. Right?
And so this idea of sharing just day-to-day life experiences with somebody else is huge, right?
Yeah.
And so we pitched this idea to you can eat pancakes with the virtual being or virtual companion, right? The sole purpose of the companion is to help you eat pancakes.
So cool. That is so cool.
Right? And it's really a statement about loneliness. And yeah. So we're excited to, you know, hopefully push that through in the next few months. So we'll keep you updated as
things go by. Awesome. No, that's really awesome. My dream will be someday I can eat pancakes on a plane with someone so I don't feel so scared of being on a plane. So, That would be amazing. I mean, I fly probably every other week, so it's like obviously I'm like managing. But yeah, no, that's really cool. I love that. I mean, it's true. We all, I can imagine that at any given point in history, that would always be our number one thing that we struggle with is loneliness. Even, and I know so much research and so many people are chiming in the conversation about how technology has made that worse. And I'm also interested in the ways that it can make it better. I think I grew up online, you know, talking to so many of my friends and using the internet as a way of connecting rather than being disconnected. And so I think there's an interesting balance there. That's really cool. I mean, I think my son, he is on Discord and talking with his friends any moment that he's online, right? Like, so even if he's just watching YouTube videos, they're watching them together and talking about it. Or even if he's just browsing, looking at funny GIFs, he just has a constant stream. Like, he's always talking, you know. You go by him, he's like online, just no matter what he's doing, he's talking to groups of people in chat rooms. And I think that's more and more people's experience is not not one of like experiencing the digital world alone, but through groups and talking. I think that's interesting. That's a very maybe a very gamer thing. Because he's a gamer.
You look at like the popularity of stuff like Twitch, which is, you know, people record themselves playing video games.
Yeah.
Right? And then, you know, there's another category of people who live stream their day-to-day life experiences.
Totally.
Like, oh yeah, here I'm in the kitchen and I'm going to make a BLT and coffee.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, yeah, you want to like buy me some like, you know, bacon, like send bacon emojis. And
right. Totally. No, yeah. I think it's fascinating. I like the way in which we're always going to hack whatever technology is available to us to make sure that we can feel more connected and be with our community. And, you know, we're social creatures. Like that's what we do. So yeah, I think it's really fascinating. And I'm really interested to see how Playmatic also creates. I mean, I think you have a very specific use case for theater, but since it's this social networked AR, I'm just interested in seeing all the iterations of it as you go through your journey with this incubator and after and beyond.
Thank you. And you know, that's kind of the goal of something that I learned at ITP is, you know, the question that we should be asking is, how can you use technology to communicate better, right? And to enhance what we have or what we don't have, right? Because so many times technology detracts and adds to the problem. And so, you know, hopefully in this journey forward, you know, we can continue connecting in positive ways. And Amelia, you know, I just want to say I'm so happy that we connected, and thank you.
Yeah. Right?
Thank you for doing so with me.
Oh no, absolutely. This has been such a wonderful chat, as all of our chats we've had have been. And thank you so much for being a part of the Wampum.codes podcast. And I can't wait for you to meet all of the other women that are part of the podcast at MIT, and also to hear the rest of the interviews as they come out. So thank you for being part of this journey. And I'm really excited to get you to meet these other women too.
I'm excited as well. I'm so excited.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be so rad. Yeah. We're going to be our own little pod. I love it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, man, I've had just such a great time talking with you. Is there any other thing that you feel like you missed or you wanted to say? I feel like we have an amazing amount of material here. So I feel very satisfied. So.
Yeah, again, you know, I'm glad that I can contribute to this process. You know, I was definitely a little nervous going in. I was like, oh, what are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
But, you know, you've been an amazing host and great with the open-ended questions. And yeah, I awesome. Can't wait to continue the journey forward.
Yeah, me too. I'm definitely going to like put in some cool music when we talk about sounds and things like that too.
So. Like hashtag Chakotay in space.
I know. Totally. Oh my God, yes. Put some space sounds in there. I love audio, so I'm just gonna go nuts. But man, thank you so much. And again, feel free, as you know, the week goes by, if you think of any other links. I mean, there's no rush because I'm still gonna I'm going to this congress, and then I probably won't be able to do too much more.